Journalist Peter Gresty has released his new book, The First Casualty, which details his time in an Egyptian prison while discussing how journalism has been brought into the war on terror. I sat down with Peter to discuss why, in a time where the Australian Prime Minister told the media that security keeps us free, terrorists want to take away our freedom, journalism is particularly important. I began by asking him what his new book is about.
I never wanted to write just another journalist memoir. You know, my story of 400 days in hell, it's been written plenty of times before by writers that are far better than I am, and have probably been through far tougher experiences as well. And to me, the book was only worth writing if I had something to say, something larger to say than just my own story. And as it happened, the more I thought about what had happened to us, the more I reflected on how it fitted into my overall career, I realized that actually this was part of what had happened to us was part of the bigger conflict between the war on terror and journalism. And so what I really wanted to do was write a book that explained, that put our story into context, that placed it squarely in that in what I see as a much broader attack on journalism from both governments and extremists all over the world ever since 9/11.
In the beginning of the book, you sort of discuss, like, journalists obviously enter into lots of difficult and dangerous situations. You sort of mentioned that you didn't always feel afraid, you felt quite safe in those situations. When did you first begin to feel fear as a journalist?
Look, every time you go to a place where bits of lead are flying around at supersonic speeds, you tend to get a little bit jittery. But for most of my career, up until 9/11 really, it was incidental fire. It wasn't aimed at us. The only times that we would be in real danger, directly in danger, is if you stumbled across a story that some warlord or somebody with a great deal of power wanted to keep hidden. But generally speaking, we weren't targets just because we'd happened to show up on the battlefield. But after 9/11, that really changed. And because we saw the war shift from a war over tangible stuff, things that you could point to war over ideas, and all of a sudden, we became the targets. And it was after 9/11 when I saw some of my colleagues, including a very good friend of mine, Maria Grazia Gattulli, who was murdered in Afghanistan, along with a bunch of other journalists, by the Taliban simply because they happened to be journalists. They weren't uncovering anything particularly radical. They weren't exposing any dramatic story. They were picked up just because of who they were, and they were executed. And that was really the point at which we realised things had started to change.
What do you feel it was about 9/11 that enacted this sort of cultural ripple?
Well, there were a couple of things. First of all, as I said, I think what we saw for a start was conflicts of old. They were generally over tangible things like ethnicity, like land and water and so on. But after 9/11, we saw a war over isms, over a war between a particularly radical branch of Islam and Western ideas around democracy and freedom of speech and so on, and Western democratic liberalism. In that conflict over ideas, the place where those ideas are transmitted becomes a part of the battle space, and that's the media. Now, I think fundamentally the nature of the war changed to the point where journalists became a part of the battle space. But equally, I think George Bush himself really turned the screws on it, because people might recall his speech to a joint session of Congress in which he stood up and said, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorist." He made it a binary choice. Now, of course, the job of journalists is to cross those lines, is to speak to all sides in the conflict, to speak to all parties involved. And in the war on terror, that included speaking to and trying to understand what was driving the Islamists, the extremists that launched the attacks. The American military launched an airstrike on the Al Jazeera bureau in Kabul in November of 2001. Although the Americans have never explained exactly why, a lot of people have interpreted it as an attack on the bureau because they were reporting on the consequences of American bombing, because they were also going to speak to the Taliban, and they got the first interview with Osama bin Laden. Now, whatever you think of the rights and wrongs of the ideology, the fact is that they were players, they were participants in the conflict, they were parties to the conflict, and therefore the Al Jazeera had a legitimate right to go and speak to them. But they were being accused of treason by the Americans. They were being accused of attacking the US ideas, US ideology. and therefore they became targets. And I think what we saw after 9/11 was that shift, where governments started to see journalists not as neutral observers, independent observers, but as participants and potentially as supporters of terrorism. And of course, that's what happened to us in Egypt.
Do you feel that this this movement towards the discussions of isms has changed the state of what a journalist is?
Yeah, absolutely. Because now, if we simply do our jobs, I think the role of journalists is to help us understand what's driving a conflict. The Australian government has made it illegal to promote terrorist ideology. That's part of the foreign fighters legislation. The problem is that as a journalist, if you go and try and speak to someone who is participating in the conflict or a would-be fighter for Islamic State or for the Taliban or whatever, if you try and understand what it is that's driving them, why they choose to join those fights, and go and interview them, go and talk to them, then you can fall foul of that legislation. You cross that line as far as the government is concerned. And I think that's a very dangerous position to put journalists in. I think it damages our capacity to really debate and understand the problems and come up with the kinds of policies and solutions that would really solve those problems.
Had you begun to think about these ideas and see these trends before your incident in Egypt?
Not really. And I was going out sailing along, being a journalist, doing my job. The fish tend not to see the water that they swim in. You know, it was a part of the environment. Things had slowly changed, had incrementally changed. I've been involved in quite a few conflicts over the years. I've been reporting on Afghanistan, on Somalia, on Iraq. And through a lot of those, I'd seen things change, but not really been aware of what those changes had meant. It was really only when I went into prison and had the time and the opportunity to think more deeply about it that I really realised that actually this was part of a much deeper trend.
And where do you hope to take this idea? Obviously, you've explored these themes in your new book, yeah. The First Casualty. But what's next? Like, how can we continue to battle these ideas?
I think one of the problems that's happened is we've largely allowed politicians to get away with the arguments to introduce things like the metadata retention legislation, the data retention legislation, which I think is a real problem. Now, the government has said that we need that legislation to give the security services the tools that they need to intercept terrorism. And that may be the case, but what we haven't done is fully understood the impact of that legislation on the media's ability to connect with whistleblowers inside government and to maintain the anonymity of their sources, to protect their sources. What we haven't done is had a conversation about the consequences on public debate, the consequences on the media's ability to hold government to account. And so inadvertently we're seeing the capacity of the press to do its job being degraded. That's because we've never had that argument. I don't think people necessarily are aware of what it really means for us. That's the problem. If people are comfortable with the consequences of it, if they're prepared to live in that kind of police state that, and with that kind of oversight and the kind of impact that has on the media's ability to do its job, then fine. That, like, I guess I'd have to live with that. I'm not sure I want to live in that kind of state, and I really don't think a lot of other people are. It's just that we've never really had that debate properly.
Do you feel too much emphasis has been put on terrorism that has allowed these, you know, tightening as the screws, as you put it?
I do. I mean, let me make it absolutely clear. Terrorism is an incredibly serious problem, a very serious threat. But I think it's been too easy for politicians to line up on the wrong side of the argument. No politician wants to be accused of being soft on terror. The Labor Party is simply not pushing back on some of the legislation. In fact, it's leading on some of these issues. I think that we've lost the political opposition to the argument. It's been very easy for politicians to simply say that we need to do this for the sake of national security, and people tend to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, okay, then that's what we have to live with. We haven't really had any serious interrogation of the risks, the threats that terrorism poses, and the consequences of the kinds of measures that we're introducing. The government is now talking about expanding the powers of detention without charge for terrorism suspects. again, what we need to think about is what that really means for police powers. Now, the powers of detention, of arrest, the warrant system, all of these systems have been in place for hundreds of years, and for very good reason, because we have judicial oversight. When you give the police the powers to detain without warrants, without arrests, when you give them the authorities the capacity to search our metadata without warrants, all of a sudden that breaks those deep-seated legal principles which have maintained that kind of balance between political power and public, and the public right to privacy and due process. If we start unpicking that due process, we start unraveling the system that, frankly, has made us one of the safest, most prosperous, peaceable countries on the planet. And that, I think, is a problem.
Do you think that we're too implicitly trustful of the government, that there is not enough questions?
When it comes to national security, I think we are. And I don't think we've really thought hard enough about it.
Is it? Do you think that's because of there's almost a political reaction game going on, in that things happen through reactionary policy?
Well, the whole point of terrorism is to be visually spectacular. A terrorist act, by definition, is frightening. It can be small impact. It can, you know, a truck plowed into a group of into a crowd of people kills and maims a whole bunch of individuals. In the greater scheme of things, actually, the risk to our way of life is pretty minimal. It's not going to change our democracy. It's not going to unpick the institutions, the system of life, the system of government, the system of rules and law that we've lived with, that we've developed for hundreds of years. But it does frighten the bejesus out of people, and politicians can then use that as an opportunity to actually tighten the screws without a great deal of question. The thing is that what we're doing in the process is actually achieving what the terrorists want in the first place, and that's, as I said, do damage to the fundamentals that underpin the system. Terrorists, I think, would much rather we live in an authoritarian state. By unpacking or unpicking these principles, these legal principles that have underpinned our system for such a long time, we're doing the job for them.
Are you hopeful that we'll be able to have these conversations, that these screws will be able to be untightened?
I think we need to have the conversations. We need to understand the consequences of what we're doing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting for a second that we give extremists free rein to attack us. What I'm simply saying is that we need to really seriously think about the consequences and make sure that we're protecting our system, both from protecting ourselves from extremists, from terrorist attacks, but equally protecting our system that has built this country and made it one of the best countries on earth.
Peter Gresty, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
That was journalist and author Peter Gresty speaking about his new book, The First Casualty.